I'm Rick Moore, and this is Connections, a podcast connecting you with news, newsmakers, sports, and entertainment voices all over the North Shore, brought to you by Moynihan Lumber of Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, and by the Institution for Savings, based in Newburyport, with branches throughout the region. Well, it's been a while, but I'm really happy to welcome back now the Reverend Vernon K. Walker, who is the policy director of the Young Democrats of Massachusetts, among other things. And Reverend Walker, welcome back. How are you?
Oh, good morning, Rick. It's always a pleasure and a delight to be with you, my friend. And we've done several of these, and I find it just a joyous delight to be back in dialogue with you.
I appreciate that, and I'm always learning stuff when I talk with you, so it's great to have you back. And we have some issues on the table here that we're going to talk about, and we're going to start with what's going on in the city of Boston with respect to the mayor's seat, because we know that Mayor Walsh is gone. You have a brand new mayor. Maybe an interim mayor. I don't know if she's actually the actual mayor now. Is the term interim applicable here, Reverend Walker, or is she actually the mayor?
Well, the charter says that she's acting mayor.
Oh, acting mayor. Okay.
So anytime that the mayor who's elected has to step back, then the president of the city council, who was Councilor Kim Janey, steps up to become the acting mayor mm-hmm. of Boston. In fact, I was just reading something that she was on TV last night, and there was a little commotion over the title between acting mayor and mayor, uh-huh. where she wanted to be called mayor. But some of the other candidates who are running, several of them, mostly women of color, and other candidates. So several of the other candidates, pushed back against that. It wasn't a forum or anything of that mm-hmm. nature, but from what I read, that's somewhat how that went. But at any rate, yeah, so it's an interesting race this year. Obviously, acting mayor Janey is the first female and woman of color and woman. First female and person of color to hold the mayoral position in Boston. So it's interesting how this will shape out. A lot of the candidates are trying to address climate change, affordable housing, racial justice, economical development, and things of public education, jobs in the economy. Candidates proposing plans to deal with the coronavirus. So it's very interesting how all this is shaping out. I think it's a very historic year in many ways, but particularly for the city of Boston and municipal government. There is so many different folks who are running, and also for the district seats and at-large seats. I have the privilege. You mentioned that I wear so many hats, and sometimes I feel like the Mad Hatter, but one of the hats I wear is I'm the political chair of the Sierra Club of mm-hmm. Massachusetts. We're in the process of evaluating candidates and whatnot. So we keep a tab of all the candidates that are in their races, not just in Boston, but various races across the state, municipal races across the state. We keep our eyes open and our ears to the ground. And being informed by our constituents and our members of what's going on in the ground. So I'm paying attention to these races, to this particular race in Boston, because I think the future is now, and the future does look bright in terms of racial diversity and racial equity. So I'm very interested to see how people lead, and I'm very interested to see how acting Mayor Janey leads, mm-hmm. And how other candidates are proposing in the lead and eventually seeing a winner and seeing eventually how that person leads.
It's funny, there's so many layers here. A couple of things I want to mention. First of all, as a former linguistics student, I ended up in mathematics, but as a former linguistics student, I'm always amazed when, the term acting mayor, that sort of has a legal term in terms of pay, in terms of voting and so on.
But to me, it's similar to like you, when you say acting police chief or interim police chief. And fine, that's fine as a label. But when I'm talking to you, it's you know, Chief Smith or mayor, whatever, because you're not acting the job, you're doing the job. So I'm always interested in that, how people perceive that. But then the other thing, you know what I was thinking, River Walker, when you mentioned that Mayor Janey is the first woman mayor in the city, she's the first person of color as mayor in the city. Mm-hmm. And here in the 21st century, I'm always blown away whenever I hear that term first. I mean, my goodness. But I guess we are making progress, so that's the good news.
Slowly but surely.
Okay. Well, speaking of that, then let's go back to last month's trial where the Chauvin, the police officer, was convicted of murdering George Floyd. It was a very, very quick jury deliberation, and there was a sense of, I don't want to say celebration, I don't think that's the right word at all, but there was a sort of a common exhale among a lot of people across the country that, okay, this does look like some form of justice. What are your thoughts on that, Reverend Walker?
Well, you know, the Chauvin trial, you know, Derek Chauvin murdered George Floyd, and he should have been held accountable. And he was, but unfortunately there was a lot of anxiety, particularly from communities of color, waiting to hear the verdict across the country because we weren't quite sure. Even though it's quite clear that it was murder, we know that historically the criminal justice system has not been user-friendly to people of color in this country, and far too often we have seen police officers kill and murder black and brown men. Eric Gardner, for an example, and also black and brown women as well. Eric Gardner, we saw Michael Brown. We've seen Tamir Rice. We've seen the likes of Breonna Taylor. We've seen the likes of Sandra Bland. And so many others. And there was also a 16-year-old shot the day that the verdict came out in Ohio. And she was engaging in a fisticuffs with another woman. It was a teenager, actually, young teenager. And a police officer came and pulled up to the scene and told her to drop the knife as she was fighting the other person or engaging in a fight. And they shot and killed her. You know, it's you know, there certainly needs to be a racial reckoning in America. And I'm often reminded by the quote of W.E.B. Du Bois, famous African-American scholar, who once noted that a system that, I'm a paraphrasing, but a system that was never designed to protect you cannot fail you. And unfortunately, with the criminal justice system, it has not historically done justice to people who suffer from state-sanctioned violence. And, you know, it's one of the reasons why I think we need to end qualified immunity nationally. And I believe one state has actually passed it. I believe it was Colorado in the last couple months, being the only state, I believe, to pass and end qualified immunity. But, you know, it's accountable. It's keeping folks like Chauvin accountable, because the reality of it is that, you know, there are some good police officers in the country. So we're not castigating all police officers, and we're not putting all police officers in the same category. However, for the few bad apples that exist in the bunch, they need to be addressed and they need to be dealt with, because it's not okay to kill people, and particularly with that Chauvin, had the knee on Floyd's neck for well over 8 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
The knees of injustice, the knee of racism, the knee of systemic injustice, the knee of oppression, the knee of systemic injustice, the knee of racism, and, you know, far too long, we are tired, you know, black and brown folks, you know, we're tired of folks, of oppressive systems and white supremacy and racism and et cetera, trying to oppress our spirits and kill our bodies, and demoralize our souls. So, you know, it's a measure of hope, that he was held accountable. But Rick, you know, it's a step in the right direction, but we have a long way to go, you know, on this path of, racial reckoning.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. Hopefully we keep moving on. And I'm also, in my opinion, I think there are way more good people in this country than bad. And that certainly includes, police. I know here on the North Shore, local police, I know a lot of the police officers, and they work as hard as they can in very difficult situations. And I hope that, we continue to be supportive of one another, in this thing, and that the things you're talking about, we white people need to be educated on, certainly, especially in certain situations in certain cities and so on. So I do appreciate that, those thoughts, Reverend Walker.
Oh, yes. One step at a time.
There you go. All right, now listen, here's the thing that fascinates me. You are also a member of an organization called CRU, and it's Communities Responding to Extreme Weather. Do I have that right?
Yes. I serve as the program manager. I've actually been there for 2 years now. That is Communities Responding to Extreme Weather.
And you have a fascinating and an interesting view. I mean, the whole organization is working on this. It looks like a very diverse and complex organization. Tell me exactly what's coming up now, because I did see a short story on the national news the other night that tended to explain why there are so many people coming up from Central America and from Mexico and below, due to the fact that they can't farm anymore. Their farms are just being destroyed, and of course it's by one thing or another, but the implication was that it's climate that's doing that, and it's forcing people to leave their homes and move northward toward the U.S. So what is the you have an environmental justice forum coming up locally, as a matter of fact. Maybe you could sort of explain this to me and what the talk will be all about.
Sure, I'd be happy to delve into that. I want to piggyback on what you just talked about people moving from Mexico, moving upward, so that they're known as climate refugees and climate migration caused because of climate.
Mm-hmm.
Folks like Katrina, like people whose homes were damaged in the Ninth Ward, they would be considered climate refugees.
Okay,
where they have to get up and move because they began being a refugee because their homes were destroyed because of a natural disaster, which is caused by climate change, such as a tornado or hurricane, et cetera. And this event that we have, it's a panel discussion about environmental justice, because we know that climate change impacts the whole world, but there are certain communities that disproportionately bear the burden. And those communities are low wealth, black and brown communities, coastal communities, are most vulnerable mm-hmm. to the climate crisis. And there's an environmental justice event happening on Zoom on May 13th, and it's presented by Belmont Against Racism. So the state rep will be on that panel, David Rogers from the 24th Mid-Sex.
Mm-hmm.
Myself, Dwayne Tindall, who's the executive director from Alternatives for Community and the Environment. And also we have some folks from Mothers Out Front, Amy Tai and Patty Heyman. And it really is going to, you know, connect to the idea that we will never survive the climate crisis without ending white supremacy. So we know that the climate crisis is connected, and it's not a single special interest issue alone, but it's connected to housing, migration, food, jobs, et cetera. So this should be an exciting panel. Again, that's on May 13th. May 13th mm-hmm. at 7:30. If folks want to look it up, they can go to the group, the Belmont Against Racism, and they should be able to find a link. Or should be able to Google that.
I'll have
sure we can share that on your website.
Yeah, I will. Yep. Absolutely. I'll put the link up there, that'll go right here with this interview, most definitely. And all right, again, that's May 13, and we'll have the information up there at 7:30 via Zoom. Okay, man, this has been a packed 12 or 15 minutes or so. Anything else you might want to mention, Reverend Walker, before I let you go this time?
Yes. Well, I'm always happy to continue to do these, continuously do these. And if people do want to know more about CREW, the Communities Responding to Extreme Weather, please check out our website, climatecrew.org. You'll see what we're about. You'll see what we do. And essentially what we do is prepare people and communities in an equitable, sustainable, and inclusive manner to become climate resilient. We talk about that on our website, and we do a lot of workshops a lot of educational workshops about connecting extreme weather such as heat waves, floods, stormwater runoff to the climate crisis, as those things are a direct result, those weather impacts are a direct result of climate change. So anyone wants to check us out, check out our website. This has been a delight and a joy, Rick.
Thank you, sir. That is the Reverend Vernon K. Walker. This is MSONewsSports.com. This has been Connections, a podcast connecting you with news, newsmakers, sports, and entertainment voices all over the North Shore. Brought to you by Moynihan Lumber of Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire. By the Institution for Savings, based in Newburyport, with branches throughout the region. Connect with Connections by emailing MSONewsSports@gmail.com.